Good evening. Time being 5:30, it's my pleasure to open tonight's meeting. Welcome to those members of the community who are in the public gallery tonight. It is 5:30pm on Wednesday the 3rd of April and I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Council meetings are also live streamed on YouTube and in accordance with Council's policy, I will ask the Acting General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Confirm, Mayor.
Thank you. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to Elders past and present, and also acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Councillor Reet, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordover, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff, we have the Acting General Manager, Mr Arnold, Director of People and Finance, Mr Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, a Senior Planner, Ms McNeil, and our Acting Executive Assistant, Ms Lewis, and we have nil apologies. Before we move on, I would of course like, I haven't got my Jack Jumper scarves here, but it would be remiss of me not to acknowledge the magnificent win by the Jack Jumpers over the course of the last week, who of course train here at our Kingborough Sports Centre that we're remarkably proud of, and I do hope when they're doing a victory lap with the trophy that they come down to Kingborough. But congratulations to all members there. I think they've brought a lot of joy to the Tasmanian community and really united us as a state. Which takes us to page one, confirmation of minutes. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting No. 5 held on the 18th of March 2024 be confirmed as a true record. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Page 2, workshops held since the last Council meeting. We had a workshop on the 25th of March where we had some discussions in relation to the upcoming budget. Declarations of interest. Does any Councillor have an interest they'd like to declare? No. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from closed into open session or open into closed session? No, thank you. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? Thank you. If you'd like to come to the lectern, and even though we know your name and address now, if you could just repeat that please for the record and then before asking your question. Thank you.
I'm Mark Dunellan from Huntingfield.
D-O-N-E-L-L-A-N? Nearly?
D-O-N-N-E-L-L-O-N.
Thank you.
All right. There's been some discussion recently in the community about the graffiti in the area, mostly, I expect, focused around the old Kingston High School site. It's my understanding that council only removes graffiti that's on council property and that most of the graffiti in the area is not on council property. It's private property and things owned by other authorities. I have three questions around this. Does council currently encourage developers to use designs that reduce the likelihood and impact of graffiti attacks?
Ooh, I don't know. Ms Tyler Moore might be able to assist us with that.
Through you, Mayor, there's no specific clause in the plan scheme about anti-graffiti or urban design principles. We do raise it with applicants when there's particularly large blank walls and encourage them to do a treatment such as different surfaces, different colours or something of the like, and we have had instances of murals built, but there's nothing specific in the scheme.
Okay. And how is council motivating other authorities and building owners to remove graffiti?
Look, I was pondering this question myself over Easter as I saw yet another large amount of graffiti go up on a building that hasn't even finished construction yet. Next is that fitness. There is that only installed the walls last week. It doesn't even have a roof, and there was a large, they were prefabricated concrete panels that went in, and it's been entirely covered in graffiti already. And it's my understanding from some chatter on social media that that particular the message that they write on that wall is one that is done in places all around Tasmania, and it seems to be a group of young people who travel from place to place leaving that particular message. It's certainly not not something that's easy for us to prevent, I guess, as a council, and I'd be very interested in discussions with Tasmania Police about what they will do, because we do have a substantial CCTV network that is fully operational within not just the Kingston CBD, but a little bit further out as well now, which would help to identify perpetrators, but that's not obviously always going to be the case. But this is very frustrating. I certainly would encourage property owners where they have had graffiti take place to try and take steps to remove it, because otherwise it just, the longer it stays there, the more it encourages other people to do copycat things. But I don't know that we have any specific powers that we can use under any sort of bylaws to direct people to remove that graffiti on their properties, unless it's been a condition of any planning application permit.
Thank you. Finally, what consideration has been made about extending council's graffiti removal to limited private property, much like the City of Hobart do?
So I'm not aware what the City of Hobart do, and it's certainly something that I think we need to look into, as this problem seems to be becoming more prevalent within the community. So I'll certainly ensure that we do have a look at the way that they handle it. We do have already around, I think it's $40,000 a year off the top of my head, in the budget for graffiti removal, and we did, that was an increase a few years ago because we were seeing more. And we also did have a discussion at the last council meeting about the concept of whether it would be feasible for us to, in some of these areas where there is property that's been repeatedly attacked, whether we could plant native trees in front of those areas to prevent them, for them to act as a barrier to prevent people from, you know, they're graffitiing areas which are, I guess, largely visible because they want to showcase their work, in inverted commas. So that is something else that we're looking at the moment, because we grow stock in our plant nursery, and so that's something that I guess for a could be, obviously take a while for those trees to grow and cover up some of the graffiti, but that could be a longer term plan as well. But certainly happy to have a look at what they're doing at Hobart City Council and in other areas. And I think there was some recognition during the recent state election that there are some significant youth issues right across the state, and it seems we're not immune to those, unfortunately. And so I think we do need to have a broader conversation about the opportunities that we're providing with and how we're engaging with young people, and what the role of the youth justice system is.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Any further questions? No? If not, we will move on. Questions on notice from the public at the time the agenda was compiled. There were no questions on notice from the public, but if you do wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Still on page two, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question? Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. I've got a set of questions about the draft budget that was released today for public comment, which recommends a 12% general rate increase. My first question is, how long does the community have to provide their feedback?
So the engagement period is open for 4 weeks. It will enable members of the community to put in submissions that will give us then a few weeks to be able to consider those and workshop them again before the budget comes before council in early June.
Yeah. Last year, when we had the draft budget, we released a survey that went to the community which had a bunch of questions. One of those questions was whether they thought that rate increase was too high, too low, or just about right. Why wasn't a similar survey provided to the community this time around?
So we did go through this last week at the workshop that we had last Monday night. We actually, our media and communications manager, who isn't with us this evening, took us through how the engagement would run, and there was a paper that was prepared, and she indicated that it was determined that the survey was probably not necessarily the best way to go about it this time. The data doesn't really sort of tell us much, and so that it was better to have to enable people to write in and tell us what they thought, so that, you know, rather than getting them to tick boxes, yes, no, maybe, don't know, whatever, that they actually get the opportunity to write something in, which a lot of people do prefer in surveys.
I recall that was an option, like people did. There were 60 responses, I think, just generic, you know, comments at the end. And I remember a lot of us citing that data because I think we had a 50% or so figure that said it was just about right. And I don't recall us talking about the survey being withdrawn. Could it be...
No, we did. We definitely did. That was... and I don't have the paper in front of me, but certainly the paper that was handed to everyone for the workshop last week, where we went through what the engagement would look like, the key dates, etc., and then the comms manager took us through it. It did indicate that there would be not a survey as such, but it is still an engagement process. So please don't... you know, we're asking people to give us feedback. We're not providing them with that opportunity. And I think in this occasion that it would be more meaningful to actually get written words from people about what they would like to see, rather than just giving them a list of items and saying, which of these is your most important, give us numbers 1 to 10. There might be things that are not on that list.
Yeah, I would have liked to see the survey in there as it was, similar to last year, because we still have that option, but it looks like that ship has sailed. The draft budget proposes that we put out today a general rate rise of 12% next year. What will the commercial rate increase be?
Director of People and Finance.
Thank you, Mayor, through you. So what's being proposed is that all rates would increase by the 12%. So it's not just the general, it's the commercial, it's the industrial, etc. also.
Last year they went up more than the general rate increase. It was 7% last year. Do we have any feedback from last year around that increased rate rise, and whether we've done any kind of consultation prior to this with businesses to see if that 12% will be impacted from it?
Director of People and Finance?
In relation to feedback from last year, I probably can't respond to that unless someone else around the table can help me. Did we do any consultation prior to this year's proposal? No, we haven't.
So last year, as sort of as part of our long-term financial plan, the rate increases going forward for the next 10 years between 2 and 4%. How does this rate rise of 12% next year impact our long-term financial plan, and when will the community find out what our long-term financial plan is?
So the long-term financial plan will be determined by council. I'm not sure if we have an exact date for it yet. I think after we pass the budget. Mr. Spinks, can you assist with that?
Yep, thank you, Mayor. So what I'm proposing is that the draft updated long-term plan be presented to the May workshop, and then it will be formally adopted at the June council meeting along with the budget.
On that, would it not be kind of appropriate for the community to understand where we were kind of thinking more long-term rather than just a 1 year, or are you happy with just setting a 12% for next year?
So it's not, well, as Mr. Spinks has just said, the long-term financial plan will be provided at the same, will be considered at the same meeting as we consider the budget, which I think is Monday the 3rd of June. So that will set the picture for the next 10 years, but like any, I mean, we change the long-term financial plan every year. It's a 10-year plan, but every year we come back and update it, and that's the thing that we've been at pains to say in the past, that it's not a static document for the life of it, that every year we need to adapt it to ensure that we can meet the goals and aspirations that we have in line with our sort of, I guess, principles of sustainability for the organisation. So it will certainly be available for people to make comment on.
Sorry, it was misunderstood. The question was around whether we should be as part of the public consultation phase, because if we're considering it May, June, that window will have closed. So at this point, all the public knows that next year we're going for 12% without knowing what might come in years 2, 3, 4, for example. So are you happy with just doing the 1 year, or is there any opportunity for the community to know what we're planning for the years ahead rather than just 1 year?
Well, like I said, we'll be considering the long-term financial plan, but in previous years, the process has been a bit back to front, and so we changed it last year. So in previous years, we would consider the long-term financial plan, lock into that, and then go into the budget process, which then gave us no flexibility to move because we had just locked in the long-term financial plan, which is probably not a great way to, for want of a better term, run a business, because that's essentially what we are. So for last year's budget, we reversed that process so that we are setting the budget in accordance with the needs that we have to continue the level of service that we are giving to the community, and then we adopt the long-term financial plan after that.
Look, I somewhat disagree that we're a business, but we can move on. Have we done any modelling to show how many residents or businesses are expected to be driven into financial hardship? And as part of the media release that went out over the weekend, we make mention of financial hardship. So given what's happened last year, do we have any data to suggest how many people have accessed that policy? And given that we are increasing by 12% in the next 12 months, apparently, do we have anything to show what might happen to those people, and what support do we offer if people are driven to financial hardship?
Just take the first comment that you made, just to rebut that, even though this shouldn't be a rebuttal thing, but you've made the comment and I will just address that. We do have to operate in accordance with the business. We have to be sustainable into the future. That is our obligation under the Local Government Act, to be able to provide certainty, I guess, for the future operations of council. So in effect, we are running as a business. In relation to your next point, which I have now totally forgotten.
Just around financial hardship access.
Financial hardship. I don't know that we... Do we have the figures here, Mr. Spinks, for that?
No, Mayor, sorry, we don't. I'm not aware of any applications for hardship since I've been with the organisation, but there may well have been some, so I can ascertain that information if required. In relation to, do we have any modelling or predictive ability to know how many may be accessing that policy in the future? No, but that would just be impossible to do.
Just in relation to that, I think it does need to be said that we are trying to make it easier for people to pay their rates by instalments. We did have discussions during the workshops about the fact that we will be making it known that we do have a hardship policy. It is already, we've had one for a number of years. It's on our website. And we also will be making arrangements so that if people do want to apply for that, they can follow the lead of other councils and apply for it online. So we hope to have that automatic facility up and running for when the new financial year kicks in, and that will enable people to enter into payment plans if they're having hardship, but it will also enable anyone who wants to be able to set up an arrangement where they can pay their rates and instalments directly from their bank account, which is something that we haven't had up until now, but we're certainly working now to put that in place.
All right. Look, yesterday the Kingborough Chronicle, which a lot of our residents use as their weekly news, quoted you as saying that you have unanimous support for the 12% rate rise amongst councillors. Given at the end of the internal budget process, I voiced my concerns with the severity of the rate rise. I'm just wondering if it was appropriate to tell residents before we've gone ahead with it to tell them that you have unanimous support.
So what I actually indicated was that we had unanimously decided to go forward with this proposal as part of the consultation for the budget. So we had to have a starting point to go out to the community, and it was certainly my understanding, and I went and double-checked this today, that we had actually all agreed by the end of the workshop last week that we were happy to go out to public consultation with the proposal that we had, and in the manner in which it had been listed, with where the communications manager did take us through the process and the timelines and what would be in that process. We have to have a starting point to the community. And I did finish that workshop, I recall very clearly, by saying if anybody has anything else that they would like to say about this, then please let me know. And there was nothing else said after that point, I believe. Like, when we got to the end of the very end of the workshop, I know prior to that, a number of councillors indicated that they were not happy with the severity of the of what we're proposing, because it is a very big figure, and I totally understand that, and I don't think anybody in this room feels happy about having to go out to the community with this figure. So you're certainly not Robinson Crusoe with that, but I will make this point, and that is I am one person sitting around a table of 10. This is not my solo decision. This is a decision that we collectively have, and we collectively decided. And certainly that was the recollection of the acting general manager who was at that meeting and other staff, that it was a unanimous decision that we would go out with that consultation process with that starting figure.
Well, I was in that conversation, and you did stay at the end. Was there anything at the end? And I did voice I was the only one to speak up at that point, so I did disagree. I understand what you're saying, that we agreed in the whole part to go out to consultation, but what it says in the Kingborough Chronicle is, quote, councillors have carefully considered our financial position and have looked at all possible solutions and have unanimously agreed that it's the only responsible way forward. That doesn't relate specifically to consultation. We do agree that we need to go and consult with the community, absolutely. But I've spent the last 6 weeks talking to Kingborough residents, and number one issue for them is cost of living. And at the point where, as I said at the end of the last workshop, I can't agree with the severity of this rate increase. And so for the fact that it was put out there already that we have unanimous agreement makes it sound as if it's a fait accompli amongst us around the table. And I do question, well, what is the point of going to consultation? If you've said it's a starting point, that's not how I read the media release. That's not how I read what's happened in the Kingborough Chronicle. It sounds like the 12 or 10 of us have gotten around and said, we agree, it's 12% and we are unanimous in that. And so I question, why would we go out to the community if we're all set on that? Because that's not what it is. It's a starting point, as you've said. There's not unanimous agreement because I'm not supportive of such a severe rate increase. So I think as a comment, because it isn't leading to a question, but as a comment, I would disagree with what you said. And I think that, yes, it's a starting point, but to say that, to misrepresent the community, to say that it's unanimous support at this point, I just think it's incorrect.
Well, I'm sorry that you feel that I've misrepresented that, but I very much remember my words at the end of that, and it was, I was seeking agreement because I don't want to be, as the person who is designated under the Local Government Act to be the spokesperson for council, but who has one vote like everybody else, I said, if we go forward with this, I don't want to be left to be hung out to dry, were my exact words. And I can see members right now nodding in recollection that that's what I said, because we had reached a consensus about how we would move forward in the public engagement to get the feedback and then go through that process. So I remember that very, very clearly.
And I do not disagree that there's a consensus whatsoever. We went forward with it, but when you asked at the end of that internal workshop, at the end of the entire process, whether there was anything last to say, and I did voice my concern, so for it to be said as unanimous is the concern that I've got.
And
what
others,
we're communicating to the community.
And Councillor Dean, others at various times throughout the process, me included, have voiced concerns about the severity of a rate rise. Every single person sitting around this table has done that during the numerous budget workshops that we have gone through, because this isn't something that we take lightly, and we've had to go through and look at the reasons why, as you very well know, we have come to this point and why we have decided that we need to take these actions now. And we've tried to communicate that very clearly to the community through the process of why are we doing it now, what has it come to, and, you know, what's in the best interests of the community. And we've had to weigh that up. And I know that this is not a, you know, something that we that collectively wanted to do. But that the reality is we had to weigh up those decisions after looking at the financial figures that our staff have prepared for us, and looking at the very significant reality that we do operate like a business, and as a business we need to remain solvent. And the figures that we were presented with will show that this year we are on track to have a loss of $2.3 million. And it shows that next year, even with a 12% increase, that we will be on track to have an underlying loss of $2.9 million. So that says that we do have an issue. We have made losses in 10 out of the last 12 financial years. And if you're a business and you're making losses 10 out of 12 years, then there's something substantially wrong and you need to actually address that. And at some point we've had to go, well, you know, now that we know that information, now that we understand the severity of it, now that the depreciation has affected us to the extent that it does, we now do have to do something about it. Because if we didn't, then we would be negligent in not doing anything about it now for the future of council's finances. Did you have another question, Councillor Dane?
Yeah, only just to say that, look, I stick to my position.
Do you have a question? Do you have Councillor?
And I'm repeating what I've said. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, that's not a question. I'll take it, and I would repeat everything that I have said as well. And I'm sorry that you disagree with the recollection, but
The recollection's about my personal position. As I've
and,
said before,
and as there are other personal positions around this table as well, so please don't try and single yourself out as the saviour to every ratepayer right now, because that's very also
unclear what my position is.
Because it is also very unclear, very unfair then to your fellow colleagues, Councillor Dean, with trying to suggest that you were the only one who spoke out at any stage through this process.
I was the only one that spoke out at the end of that internal workshop process, though.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. If there's no further question, we will move on. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to ask some clarifying questions as well, based on what Councillor Dean has shared. There seems to be a concern about us having a unanimous position. Would you say that given the diversity of perspectives on council, the fact that we came to a unanimous decision holds weight with the community, given that there's a large part of us that are not persuaded to have a pay rise, but given the evidence was so persuasive that something like that should probably hold weight with the community?
Well, as I've just indicated to Councillor Dean, that was the I thought we were heading down that path, because I thought that we had all understood the gravity of the situation, the evidence that was being provided to us, and a solution as to how we turn the ship around and start steering it in the right direction so that future generations aren't impacted by what is increasingly a difficult position for council. So clearly it would seem that there is a difference of opinion about the recollections of the last workshop, or maybe even the one before. But I thought, yes, that there was certainly... It surprised me, as I think it surprised all of us ourselves, that once we're presented with the information that we realised that we needed to embrace something of that magnitude. And I think that whilst it might be very difficult for the community to appreciate the difficult financial circumstances that we're in, we have very few opportunities as council for income streams, and unfortunately we have a lot of commitments that we have that are statutory obligations that we need to continue in the interests of the public well into the future, and they come with resource implications.
I don't recall in the workshops anyone being happy about the rate rise. Am I wrong with that, Mayor?
No, not at all. I think we all expressed concerns at one point or another, and there were some tough conversations that we had to have.
And please correct me if I'm wrong, Mayor, that when the model we modelled various rate rises and rates, multiples, and hats off to our Chief Financial Officer for indulging us through that difficult process. And from what I recall, the only rate rise that would... And we also, Mayor, correct me if I'm wrong, refused to put certain costs on the table that we were hoping to do because of that. So it's a two-part question, sorry, but the only rate rise that seemed to work mathematically based on the cost-cutting was the 12% rate rise that we're announcing. Is that your recollection as well?
It certainly is, and we did have the advantage of having our Director of People and Finance with a spreadsheet where we could look at the figures and look at what it would take to redress the issues and to make sure that we don't end up running out of cash in a couple of years' time, which, the Auditor General would frown upon. So certainly, yes, that is my recollection, that we did try a range of figures that we plugged in to the modelling.
And my final question is, my recollection, correct me if I'm wrong, is that we actually did some cost cutting and we didn't put things on the table. We took things out of the budget that were dear to the hearts of several councillors, and we had to lay that down for the sake of the greater good. Is that correct?
I think when it comes to the Capital Works program, absolutely. There were a lot of items that I know that people are very passionate about and projects that we would like to advance, but we've had to recognise that the rising cost of doing business, particularly when it comes to any building and construction work, makes it exceedingly difficult to have a very large capital works program at this point in time and probably in the foreseeable future. There's no indication that any of the costs are going down for any of the building activity, and as we know, most of the tenders, even though we've adapted our expectations, I guess, in the last few years, a lot of the tenders that we're seeing are still coming in significantly over budget.
Over budget, yeah, I remember that. Thank you. I appreciate you helping me clarify some of that. I personally recall very clearly you needing consensus and you received consensus. And yes, there were some concerns from a councillor about the final figure. There was multiple concerns, but it was self-evident that we had no choice. And I do back you on what you shared before, that it was a unanimous decision. But I would like the public to know, unanimous is the start. It was unanimous so that we could put something to consultation. We didn't have... So putting something to consultation, it's fair to say, Mayor, the fact that it was unanimous should give the community some sense that it's a solid figure, not an airy-fairy figure based on complete disunity of council that one could call into great question. So I'd say it's fair. The fact that it's unanimous does not mean that something is set in stone. It just means that we realise from our varying positions and passions that we had no choice.
Yep. Thank you. I think that's a good summation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? If not, we will move on. Questions on notice from councillors. There was one from Councillor Cordova in relation to graffiti and street tree strategy, with a response from Ms Quinn. Open session of council now adjourns, and the planning authority commences at what time? At 6:03. So we're on page 4, Officers' Reports to Planning Authority, DA 2023-174, Development Application for Recycled Water Treatment Plant at 112, 116 and 120 Tinderbox Road, Blacklands Bay, with a recommendation on page 33. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So this assessment is for the development at the subject site at Tinderbox Road,
and is related to the construction and use of the recycled water treatment plant and associated infrastructure and works. So my understanding is that water will be piped across to Jellybrand Nature Reserve over in Southarm for the golf course. I feel like this report has been explained extremely well, so thank you to staff for that. There were 20 representations, 16 objections and 4 supporting. I feel like the report has addressed all of the concerns that were raised in the objections. I note too that some additional conditions were even included in response to some of those concerns, so that's good to see. I recall, is it 14 conditions are attached to this development application and 4 points of advice. So I feel satisfied that this has been adequately assessed and I'm happy to support the recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Gladright. Further discussion, Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I have some questions around section 2.5, which is the public consultation and representation section. Could someone advise me where it says just before 2.5.1, there's a couple of paragraphs ahead, it says all representations related to the application before council were objections. So there was a lot of representations, a lot of them had nothing to do with the site, that had a lot to do with Clarence stuff, and then in the end, the only representations that you could deal with were all objections. They numbered 5, with 1 received out of time. So can someone explain to me what then the 4 supporting representations were? Were they Clarence related? Because they're not included in the all representations.
Ms. McNeil.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, so the only supporting representations related to the use of the water in Clarence, so that's not part of our assessment.
Councillor Antoli.
Let me just clarify, Ms. McNeil, of the 4 supporting representations, they were all from Clarence or regarding Clarence. Great. Okay, so in the end, all you guys had to deal with was 5 representations that were all objections. Okay, thank you. That's a clarification. If I can I keep asking some more?
Yep, yes.
Thank you. 2.5.1, noise. I understand from the locals that there is concern about the noise in reality being much higher than the noise reports. And you mentioned that there... Can I ask, were there any... noise checks done live during the process, during the works, because my understanding from the locals is it seems to have far exceeded what was being proposed.
Ms. McNeil or Ms. Tullamore, either one.
Through you, Mayor. So obviously no construction has begun. It's not operating, so you can't actually measure. It's based on a noise expert's assessment of what they expect to occur based on the machinery and equipment and the distance from the receiver, the residential receiver, which is the houses nearby. So that's what the assessment is based on. What the EPA have then required is that to be actually measured once it's underway, and if it doesn't meet the requirements, then they'll have to do mitigation measures. So at the moment, the containers do have noise retardant internal finishes. If that's not adequate, then there'll be further mitigation that has to occur. So any emissions from that site, be it noise, odour, will have to be mitigated. And that's what the EPA regulate, and actually it's not a council matter because the EPA are regulating it and they've put a condition on it.
Thank you.
Yep.
If I may continue. When you say no construction has begun, does that include like foundation work or any groundwork?
Ms. McDowell.
Through you, Mayor. You can't begin construction before you have a permit.
The residents have complained about a lot of jackhammering and noise of that nature. Would that be to do with someone else, do you think?
There is a pipeline that has been approved, so potentially it's to do with that. I'm not aware of any construction that's occurred related to this application.
I met a large contingency of locals down there last year. They felt that their concerns about noise happening was concerning, given that no construction was yet approved, and they were concerned that actual work was actually being done without approval. And they had brought up noise complaints to council and were told, and I was even told by a senior council officer in an email who lives nearby, that they've heard no noise, so it mustn't be happening. They can't see what the complaint is about. So did you guys receive any complaints last year about jackhammering, noise, what is going on over there? This thing is not being is not permitted, yet something is going on, something is being constructed. Was there any of that sort of consultation or chatter?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the concerns that arise about potential illegal works occurring we'd need to investigate, and is not relevant to the decision-making of the application tonight. If there are concerns by the public, we can follow it up. I'm not aware of particular complaints on this site. There were sites nearby that we had received complaint about, and we're happy to look at that, but it is a separate matter to this application.
I represented some of those complaints in an email to council and was told that nothing's going on.
So can we just come back to the planning matter at hand, because we're sitting as a planning authority.
But this is the planning matter, because we're talking about consultation.
No, but what Ms. Tullamore has just indicated is that we're talking about the development application before us, which it hasn't been constructed yet. So we're talking about noise. The only relevant noise is the noise referred to in 2.5.1, which the EPA has said that within 6 months of the plant operating, that they're required to submit a noise survey, and that then there will be obviously if that noise survey suggests that there are issues, then they will be asked to remediate them, and they're the conditions that the EPA have put on them. That's outside of our control.
I hear you. I've just been told by council officers that no construction should have been happening on site prior to today. I am asking questions why suspicions from the community that construction has been happening on site haven't been addressed. I would like to know, is there evidence that illegal construction has occurred up to this date? Because if it has, it pollutes this application.
Well, I understand Ms. Tullamore said they're not aware of any illegal construction happening at that site. Is that
and
correct?
My concern is...
Yes, that's right, Mayor. But as I said before, we're happy to investigate it separate to this as a compliance matter to see if there is works in the area that are occurring, whether on this site or another site, to understand what the residents want have heard or can hear. We're happy to do that, but it is a separate process to the assessment of the application.
So I have in writing emails between myself and multiple council officers last year alerting council staff to the concerns of locals who live metres from this site that they thought illegal construction was happening already. And I never got an investigation. So it's no good investigating something now that happened 7 or 8 months ago. Why wasn't it acted on when I, a director of this body corporate, alerted you all to that potential? I have received an email from one of the senior members at this table saying, I live nearby, there's no noise, nothing to worry about. That to me is not an investigation. That's an opinion.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, we are happy to take it on notice. If it can be appreciated that complaints can come to several areas, whether that's our compliance team, whether it's our environmental health officers who manage noise complaints and building. I don't have the information in front of me about the complaint, so I wouldn't want to make up the answer about it. That's why I'm suggesting that we come back and do the investigation as to whether there were responses, not just the investigation on site, so that I can give you a proper answer. It's better to take it on notice.
Right, so I would then request a review, and if that's the case, it could affect this DA. Is that not correct?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, it's still a separate matter whether there's compliance matters on the site, and I don't think there would be a reasonable justification under the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act to not make a decision on that when there is no good evidence to suggest that there's illegal works, and certainly the LUPA does not... It is not specific about illegal works occurring on site, and certainly the planning permit is for the proposed use.
Do eight people who live nearby all of the same opinion about the same events as eyewitnesses, is that not good evidence in most circumstances, in most courts of law? And when I brought this to the council's attention, it was not dealt with. And I'd like my peers to know about it, because they need to vote on this, and they need to vote with full understanding as directors. They should be fully aware.
Through you, Mayor, people making complaints about something is not enough evidence. We need to investigate. We need to go to the site. As I said to you before, I don't have the investigation before me. It may not have been my department. There's several departments that deal with these investigations. I'm happy to come back to it. I still don't think it bears a lot of standing as to whether the permit should be approved or not. If there is non-compliance of works commencing without required planning permits, then we will do the enforcement relevant to that.
What it does bear is that you have responses here about noise. You had questions from the committee about noise, and you have responses that, in my view, haven't addressed them.
So,
and that's part of this planning authority application. It's part of our job as PAs, as members of the planning authority, to call into question the report. I have issues with your responses to 2.5.1 based on what I have shared already as evidence.
So, Councillor Antoli, what Ms Tullamore has indicated is that we will make sure an investigation takes place in relation to the noise complaints, and whether there has been any illegal activity on this site. That is a separate issue from what's on here. What we have here before us is a development application that where the EPA have put significant conditions on the operator of the plant to ensure that they don't breach the noise limits. And as such, they have thought ahead to put a condition in that to say within 6 months of commissioning that needs to be a noise survey, and also that they need to look at noise during the construction phase. So
okay,
the EPA have put as much rigour around it as I think they're able to, and I'm not sure that we're able to go much further than that as
okay,
a council.
So I have a commitment from the Mayor that an investigation will be done, and we can maybe even regroup the witnesses that I mentioned in my report and the individuals, and a proper investigation will be done after today. Is that correct? Is that the undertaking I have?
Yes.
Right.
If there are complaints, then we need to follow through on the investigation process.
Thank you. I shouldn't need the Mayor to follow up on one of my legitimate complaints that I lodged last year. And I shouldn't need someone to answer the complaint by saying, I live nearby, I don't hear anything, there's no truth to the matter, or I don't believe there's anything to be answered here. So I want that reviewed as well, and I will submit that correspondence to the Mayor, and she, with her officers, can investigate whether or not my complaint was dealt with appropriately, because it was dealt with at the most senior level. Can I continue with some questions?
Thank you, Councillor.
Thank you. Antoli. Visual impact. Thank you for noting that there are concerns about the visual impact. Will the recommendations of design changes and flora and fauna changes to mask the impact, will any of that be consulted back to the locals to see whether or not it satisfies them, or will it just be decided between the operator and council staff?
Ms. McNeil?
Through you, Mayor. So we will look at the landscaping plan. So there's already a landscaping proposal of 40-plus plants, and they're planted too deep around the actual facility. But we understood there was concerns about the Suncoast walkway and also the new sealed access. So we have spoken to the applicant and they agree that they can do additional landscaping. So the species selection would be predominantly Kingborough species, and it would have to have the effect, as the condition says, of screening those effectively. So no, it doesn't go back out to review by the public. It comes to the councillors and between council officers, and so between the environmental planners who would look at the species selection, and also the proponent would give indication of maximum height and depth to show that it's going to be effective. Then if we agree and the manager agrees, then we will endorse the plan and then they have to implement it and maintain it.
Thank you. I was advised by locals that a representative of the operator actually met with them at some point in the past and showed them plans that they seemed quite satisfied with, and what they saw developed or what they saw was actually put into a council documentation was vastly different, far more obtrusive. So there seems to be a concern that they were hoodwinked. And the concern from the community is, will the rectifications meet the needs and the standards of the local community and those who live right opposite? Can there be some sort of consultation between what is presented to council as rectification and the locals to sort of ensure that we have limited blowback from them, given that there seems to be a bit of sleight of hand from their point of view between what they were promised it would look like and what has eventuated in design?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, we can't make any comment about any consultation that a developer does with the public, and we appreciate comments that are made from time to time either way about what was said or promised or and what occurred. We can only look at the plans presented to us. The it's standard practice that we would review those revised plans and endorse them once they're satisfactory. We wouldn't go to public consultation for that. If the residents have real concern about the controls that are within the conditions of the permit, they do have appeal rights, should they want to exercise them.
Could we not encourage the proponents to go back to the community in relation to those plans?
Through you, Mayor, yes, certainly we can encourage. We can encourage many things, but I wouldn't want to set up an expectation that we have an ability to enforce that. It's my understanding that they have been fairly cooperative through the whole process, so it may be something that they would consider.
I think perhaps some encouragement on our part wouldn't go astray then.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd appreciate that. We have locals who live next door to this facility who feel that stuff has been going on there that is underhand. Enough so that they've asked, I believe, two councillors. I am one. I believe there's another councillor around here that's been asked to talk to them as well. And I did make a complaint, and I don't feel that that complaint was dealt with adequately, which concerns me. I'd like to ask one or two more. I appreciate the answers. And by the way, I thought that your answer on the rectifications was great. I just needed to want to see if they could be included. If I could just...
One more.
Yeah. 2.5.8. It says consultation is not required prior to the lodgement of an application. The public notification period allows for members of the community to review and submit a representation. So I'm a bit confused about that. So consultation is not required prior to the lodgement. So it's done after the lodgement is what you're trying to say for the community.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, through the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act, it's stipulated the process. So once an application is received and information is adequate, it's put on public notice.
Okay.
It's up to a developer if they want to do consultation outside that.
So this alleged meeting that happened between the operator and the locals would have been their own consultation that they went
through.
It wasn't anything official.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't mandated. It
no.
was something they decided to do, like...
Yeah, which is great.
Like
normally.
One of the developers of the shopping centre nearby has
yeah.
been doing public consultations.
Which is great.
Yeah.
From their point of view, they feel that what was consulted with them is definitely not what they're seeing in the application here. And I think I might have one question, or that might be finally it. No, that's it for me for now. Thank you for answering my questions.
Thank you. Further discussions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I understand that the application before us tonight is about works in Kingborough. And I also understand that the Tasmanian Conservation Trust sent a letter to the General Manager in December 2023. I'm wondering, was that letter sort of part of the representations? Or considered as part of, sorry.
Ms. McNeill.
Through you, Mayor, yes, it was a representation.
Yep. Thank you.
But it didn't deal with the Kingborough issues.
Okay, thank you. So I guess in regards to that, I thought it would be really important that, you know, this letter is tabled at this meeting, so we are aware of the issues raised by Tasmanian Conservation Trust. And also I note that, you know, this has been an ongoing discussion with Clarence Council as well, and that Clarence councillors were provided perhaps with a presentation regarding it. Have we been provided with a presentation? I can't recall, but I don't remember absolutely everything. And I'm wondering why Clarence Council did and why Kingborough Council wasn't, or maybe we did.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. No, there was no presentation or a request for one, and the representations that were submitted are all available to the councillors. They're available via the Dropbox, so that has been tabled to councillors.
Okay, thank you. Sorry for that incorrect statement. I guess in regards to the presentation that Clarence Council received regarding this project, why... have we received a presentation regarding the project, the overall project, regarding the pipeline?
No, I'm not aware that we had a request for one. No, we didn't receive a request to hold a workshop with them.
Oh, OK. Yep. Just, anyway, I think they've had one in 2018. There was one online that I looked at, also recently, I think, in 2022. I could be incorrect around those dates, but I guess I'm just wondering why they were received an overview of this project, where it has raised quite a few different issues for different people in the community. I guess why we weren't provided with such an overview.
I don't know. You'd have to ask the proponents that. There's Ms. Tyler Moore's got a crystal ball.
Through you, Mayor, I suspect because it impacts them much more than it impacts us. Effectively, at the Kingborough end, it's just infrastructure.
Yep.
At their end, they're using it, and they have the more controversial issues about the land uses, the tenure, the hand fish and other matters.
I would like to read some of the points from the Tasmanian Conservation Trust letter that was submitted, because it did form part of the submissions that we could open in our Dropbox, and I'm not sure if everybody read those around the councillor room. So the Tasmanian Conservation Trust does not have any specific concern regarding the Blackmans Bay water treatment plant, but we do have two serious concerns regarding the associated use of that treated water to irrigate the proposed Arm End golf course, impacts on the endangered spotted handfish, and impacts on visitor health and recreational use and enjoyment. Based on the concerns raised about these two issues, detailed below, the letter's about 8 pages, the TCT calls on the Kingborough Council and Environmental Protection Authority to refuse a permit for the Blackmans Bay Water Treatment Plant and associated use of that treated water to irrigate the proposed Arm End golf course. If it is within the power of the regulators to approve the treatment plant but refuse the reuse scheme at Arm End, then we would support that outcome. They've noted, as stated by our staff, the spotted handfish and the way the water is used. I guess in regards to our recommendations, did we consider any of these issues that have been raised in the TCT comments at all in our recommendations or anything to the proponent? Can we advocate at all for any of these future impacts that the Tasmanian Conservation Trust is outlining and advocating for?
Ms. McNeill.
Through you, Mayor. We can only look at our own scheme. So obviously we can't regulate anything that happens in Clarence, and there are no standards in our scheme that relate to a reuse of water in another municipality. So all we're looking at really is the facility, the pipes, the works, the tree removal, that's all really we're looking at. The actual reuse scheme's been through assessment elsewhere, so also by the state government, because it was it's in a reserve, a public reserve, so that's gone through assessment. And the reuse of water has also gone through an assessment process. So the fact that it's a Class A water and the safety of the reuse, that has been assessed. And I think although the representative disagrees with that, it has gone through a separate assessment process already. Also, we have the pipeline that we've already approved, and it would seem incredible to refuse the use of the water that we've approved a pipeline to supply to the other side of the river. But, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that detail. Just one other question and a comment that I had from a community member in regards to just the actual placement of where that infrastructure is, noting there's a beach just in front of the sewage treatment plant that is recreational use for diving, surfing when the points are working and that sort of thing. Like, is there any impact on that location?
Ms. McNeil.
Through you, Mayor. No, so what happens is the Class B treated water goes from the sewage plant, the existing sewage plant, it's piped up to the recycling system, goes through a series of treatments, so it's further purified, then it's taken to the top of the pipeline drill shot, which is actually nowhere near the beach or the cliff. It's up sort of to the south of the existing sewage treatment plant. So there's no further impacts. So it's all up. So it's basically coming from the eastern side of the treatment plant, pumped up, and then taken to the drill shot. So, no, it's nowhere near the cliff edge.
Councillor Mitchell, anything further? No. Councillor Fox.
Just further to Councillor Midgley's question and the answer from Ms. Donnelly, the land on the other side is state land where the golf course is, and you stated it's a public reserve. Does that mean that Clarence Council will also be receiving a DA, or is this going to bypass the Clarence Council?
Ms. McNeil.
Through you, Mayor. They've already issued a permit back in 2015 for the golf course in the Gellibrand Reserve.
And the second question is, you've stated that the pipeline has already been approved. Has that gone through the council process? Because I don't recall that coming.
Yeah, it was a 2018 application, I believe. It's in the background section of this report.
Any further discussion? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This is about the intensification of use as I look at it, and I really note at the outset that we're just looking at Kingborough, we're just looking at this proposed development application. As we've heard, it's just the facility, the pipes, the construction works, the vegetation removal, the noise and so on, but it relates specifically to Kingborough, and so does my contribution. As 2.3 statutory planning section on page 14 explains, basically, in the environmental living zone, this is discretionary. In the open space zone, this is discretionary. So firstly, to my points, and also Council's assessment of this proposal should also consider the issues raised in the representations. Firstly, to clause 14.3.1, non-residential use, P1, the hours of operation. Please, as a question, can I just get some clarity on the current status of the hours of operation, and am I correct in that the intensification of use here is that it's going to 24 hours a day? And I'm trying to get a clear sense of how much intensification there is.
Ms. McNeil.
Through you, Mayor, my understanding is the current treatment plant is a 24/7 operation.
Thank you. And through you, Mayor, in terms of intensification of use, obviously there's many elements that go into the intensification of use, and I'm just trying to paint a clear picture of that. There's, you know, vehicle movements, there's light and noise, there's there's many elements. There's also the building site itself. So can we have a clear sense, if it's possible to paint one, of the percentage, let's say, increase in intensification? Like, if this was a 2-litre ice cream tub, is it another extra litre ice cream tub on top of that? Is it a doubling? Is it a tripling? What's the intensification like?
Ms. McNeil.
That's a hard one. Sorry, through you, Mayor. It's a hard one to answer. I'm just trying to recall the volume of wastewater that goes through the existing plant, and I can't off the top of my head. But basically, yeah, so in terms of, I can answer in terms of car movements and staffing and that kind of side of it. So basically there'll be usually one staff member in a light vehicle. The operational hours for that, Monday to Friday till 6 p.m, and I think some use on Saturday. Just one light vehicle for that. They just have to monitor it because it can be run completely remotely. So it's just for little repairs and monitoring. They also have to deliver the chemicals. So there will be 1,000 litre chemicals delivered every 20 days. There will also be four times a year they need to, my understanding is they need to clean out the tanks. And so that would be something that would happen four times a year, and that will be a larger pump vehicle. But in terms of noise, we've already talked about, so I think if you're thinking about overall emissions, the noise report says there will be no increase, and the odour isn't expected to be an issue either. So does that answer your question?
Yeah. Thank you, through you, Matt. That's really helpful, yeah, painting that picture. And, of course, taking into consideration what was said in the various representations, the hours of operation, I understand that they're 24/7, and I note that the report claims that noise and personnel access won't constitute a nuisance or unreasonable impact on residential amenity. And it's this question of what constitutes an unreasonable impact versus a reasonable impact that I'm going to try and tease out here in my contribution. I disagree. I think that the EPA condition G6 regarding a complaints register doesn't go far enough to satisfy me that any alleged environmental harm, including environmental nuisance, will be appropriately investigated and resolved. So what it says in the report is basically, obviously, that we haven't built it yet, so we don't know how much noise there'll be, but don't worry about it, there'll be a noise register, and any alleged complaints we can deal with and investigate. I don't take great comfort from that, and we've heard a bit about why. So to my first point of why I don't think this meets the planning scheme, it's clause 14.3.1, P1. Secondly, in terms of the environmental living zone, so now we're looking at clause 14.4.3 design. Long story short, there'll be some excavation works and access, and the pad exceeds 1 metre, and in places the pad also requires fill greater than 1 metre, and therefore this becomes discretionary. So the officer's report claims, it explains rather, on page 18 that, quote, the excavation and fill don't represent... Quote, the excavation and fill do not unreasonably impact upon natural values with works located in a predominantly cleared area, and it goes on to talk about the trees. Again, on this point, I respectfully disagree because I think those proposed works do contravene 14.4.3a, which is about it claims that there is no unreasonable impact on natural values. I think there is. And 14.4.3b, which is about detracting from the landscape character of the area. Thirdly, in 14.4.3A1C, all of this issue around visual impact. So on page 28 in the officer's response, we see, quote, concerns raised in the representations are considered of relevance. There is a reasonable expectation that land in the coastal proximity in the environmental living zone would retain a scenic natural state where remnant natural values of some importance are located, and it's understood by the applicant that the industrial development will disrupt existing scenic conditions. End quote. So that there, to me, is the nub of this issue. I think the issue of noise that's been extensively discussed is an important one, and it's very vexing because, obviously, we're just assessing this permit, and so there's no noise yet, so we have to just predict what the noise will be. And as I said before, I don't take enormous amount of comfort just based on the industrialisation of the site already does impact amenity. And one of the things that kind of moved me was in one of the representations, here's a quote from one of the local residents, quote, already there is considerable noise from pumps needed for the wastewater treatment with when power outages occur, apart from the routine pump noise. During these outages, the noise is enough to interrupt sleep patterns in our nearby residents, and also the extra lights are quite invasive, adding to the overall disruption. The position of the proposed development would add to this noise level, and it would be constant, end quote. So I do see that, yeah,
we can't say exactly what the noise will be, but, you know, that's a quote from one of the local residents who's saying what the noise is, and we can only predict what the noise might be. So I do note and accept the reasoning provided in the officer's report pertaining to a lot of other clauses. For example, commercial vehicle movements, I agree with the report. Stormwater drainage, I agree with the report. And the alteration of the pipeline route to ensure that it's outside the tree protection zones of trees 38 through 56. And I'm also satisfied with the report assessment pertaining to landslide risk. I totally agree with all of that, that the hazardous use is not within the high landslide hazard area, the risk is deemed acceptable. I get that. And I also think it's worth noting that no mitigation or future remediation works are required within the 50-year design life provided recommendations are adhered to, and the health and safety of people will not be placed at risk within the design life. End quote. So there are many aspects of this proposal that do comply. May I please ask for three more minutes? I've got two more paragraphs, or less.
Got a mover in, much to my surprise, Councillor Antoli, and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. All those in favour of Councillor Cordova being provided three additional minutes? Aye.
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. You have three more minutes.
Thank you kindly, Mayor. There are many aspects to this proposal that comply. However, on balance, due to the contravention of the planning scheme of Clause 14.3.1(p)(1), which is the hours of operation, intensification of use, and Clause 14.4.3 A, B and C, which relates to all those visual impacts of further industrialisation of this site in the environmental living zone, I believe this proposal does not comply and I will be voting against it. Ultimately, this is a question of what is, quote, a reasonable impact on residential amenity, end quote. And on that issue, I think reasonable minds may indeed differ. So I respectfully take a different view from that which is presented in the report and I'll be voting against. Thank you.
Thank you. Further speakers? Councillor Gladewright, did you want to sum up? No? I'm going to put the recommendation. It's as printed in the papers on page 33. It was moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
No.
Well, a show of hands is required. All those in favour? Raise your hands. Is Councillors Dean, Bain, Midgley, Richardson, Street, Gladewright and Reet, and those against is Councillors Antoli, Fox and Cordova. The motion is carried. Planning Authority now adjourns at 6:41pm and open session of Council now recommences at 6:41pm. Takes us to page 116, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned, and at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no new petitions that had been received. Officers' reports to Council. We have Chief Executive Officer Title Policy 1.23 with recommendation on page 118. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Street. Seconded, Councillor Gladewright. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Before us, we've got a report for the Chief Executive Officer Title Policy. Council took a decision recently with the appointment of our new CEO that person would no longer be called the General Manager in Kingborough, but the Chief Executive Officer. Rightly, Council has identified that there needs to be a policy in place in order to make that change because the Act refers to the appointment of a general manager rather than a chief executive officer. So we need a policy that makes clear that those people are one and the same person. That policy does that, or this policy does that, would appear to do that well, and I fully support the adoption of the policy. One question. Clearly, we're not the first council to have done this. Hobart City Council have already made the change as well. A question, did we review any policy documents that Hobart City Council have in place and have been using thus far in the creation of our policy document?
Yeah, and Clarence Council has adopted this as well, and I think a couple up north as well. But Mr. Smee, can I help us with the policy document?
Through you, Mayor, yeah, we certainly didn't reinvent the wheel. We did make contact with other councils that have been down a similar path, and we went to the same legal firm that they used to obtain our advice.
Councillor Street.
Are we aware of any issues at all that any other council that's already made this decision has had?
No, we're not. And it's my understanding that that it is likely that the state government and future amendments to the Local Government Act will resolve this, given the tendency now for councils to adopt the more contemporary title for rather than general manager as CEO.
And at that time, this policy will become obsolete.
It will.
Great. Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Fox.
I guess I'm interested in the why we decided to go down this path to have the CEO instead of general manager, and what benefits there are other than that it might sound good.
Look, it's just a more contemporary term that that councils all around Australia have been using for some time, which has now started to creep into Tasmania. So we believed that we should follow suit. And as I said, I think it's something that the state government will move on in the future anyway. And I think it reflects what I was talking about earlier. We are essentially a business, and this is our CEO, rather than what was, you know, the previous terms of sort of general manager, and before that, what was the old term? Clerk, council clerk. So the titles of the positions have evolved over time. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Very briefly, I question the why as well. It might be a more contemporary term, but it's not the term that's reflected in the Local Government Act, so all of this is duplicative. We're just having to... I grant that we're copying Clarence or Hobart or whoever, and we're copying and pasting, and that's fine. But it's also, in my mind, I'm not convinced by the case of why it's so urgent that we move first before the Local Government Act changes the terminology. We didn't yet get an opportunity to vote on whether we think it's a good idea to switch to this quote-unquote more contemporary terminology to reflect, you know, the business acumen of the position. And there's merits for and against it, but I'm registering my... disapproval of the idea of changing the name, and this is my opportunity to do so. So I will be voting against. When the state government moves on with its contemporary naming policy, then I think we can and we should. But I see no reason for us to, I guess, kind of navel-gazing about what's the name of the thing. Should it be a CEO, or should it be a... You could call it the role of Flying Spaghetti Monster. It's the same. It's a general manager, according to the local... what I'm saying is, you know... you could insert any kind of name, but it's a general manager according to the legislation which governs the role. And so I just think stick with general manager rather than replicating all of... Because what if in the new Local Government Act, when it comes in, what if they change the name? Instead of being a CEO, they call it the Corporate Management Expert. We don't know what the name will be, and then we'll have to do all this again. So I don't see we need to change the name away from general manager, and therefore I'm registering my...
Protest.
My protest with my vote against. Thank you.
You want to lie down in front of anything and chain yourself to something? Councillor Antoli.
Oh, don't tempt me with that one.
You can chain yourself to the general manager's door.
Yeah. There are protest laws now where you can't do that at a workplace. I'm happy to advise. I think it's a great move. I support it. I think there's more to it than just being a contemporary move. A chief executive officer commands... culture. What's funny, in the corporate world, general managers report to either a managing director or to a chief executive officer. You cannot have a general manager who reports to the board. It doesn't exist anymore. It hasn't existed for many, many times. I have a general manager. He reports to me. I'm the CEO, and I'm ultimately accountable to the board. The GM does not report to the board. So I do think it's an excellent change. And also, chief executives are meant to enforce culture by example, and that is something that we want to see into the future. So I fully support it. I was backing it from the beginning, and I'll be voting for it for all the reasons that the mover mentioned.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Any further discussions? Councillor Street, I'm assuming you don't want to sum up. Although we have missed you, so we like your dulcet tones, but you probably won't get home. Okay, I'll put the recommendation as printed on page 118, moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Gladright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
Aye.
Show of hands is required. All those in favour? It's Councillors Antoli, Dean, Bain, Oh, sorry, that's what I was doing. Okay. Antoli, Fox, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Richardson, Street, Glade, Wright and Reid. Those against, Councillor Cordova. The motion is carried. Takes us to appendices on page 123. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Street. Any questions on the appendices? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just interested on the 27th of March, the meeting with representatives from the Huon Valley Council. Is that about working together?
Thank you, yes. So the acting General Manager and the Deputy Mayor and I met with the Huon Valley Council General Manager, Mayor and Acting Deputy Mayor last week. It was a very amicable meeting. We discussed we discussed primarily the sharing of resources because we believe resources can mean a whole lot of different things. But we agreed that if we were going to have a serious conversation with our communities about amalgamation, that we would request the state government to put together some modelling that any councils that wanted to go down that path could use that modelling to be able to then show some tangible benefits to the community as to what they would receive if the amalgamations went ahead. So we agreed that that would be our first step. There will be some further discussions with the general managers of respective councils. The Huon Valley Council is also having some conversations about shared resources with some other smaller councils like Derwent Valley and Central Highlands and Southern Midlands and Tasman. And so there was certainly, I think, appetite to look at that shared resources and what that could mean. But it was, it was an hour-long meeting. Everybody was very open and honest, and we agreed that we'd continue to look forward and write to the government to see what the response would be. Any further questions? Councillor Fox.
I guess I'm most interested in the meeting with the Leslie Vale Community Group and regarding the Hazel Brothers Quarry, and wondering whether that is going to come to council in the near future and what the concerns of the residents were. Thank you.
So there has been a new community group that's been formed in Leslie Vale specifically around the issues of concern about the expansion of the quarry, and those concerns relate to noise but also to some of the impacts of the heavy vehicles, concerns around the intersection of the Huon Highway and Leslie Vale Road, which is I think something that has been a concern anyway, but the impact of having additional heavy vehicles in that area. Also some of the locations where some of the heavy vehicles are stopping in the road and sort of idling around waiting for the quarry to open are causing concern by residents. And it would seem that I don't have a date yet as to when we would get a development application here. I understand it's all still with the EPA at the moment, so that the EPA has to go through their due diligence and all their matters before the development application comes before council. But we are certainly looking at some of the issues that we may be able to have an impact on, and that relates to whether we can approach the Department of State Growth in relation to asking the heavy vehicles not to use their air brakes in that residential area because it's disturbing some of the residents. There is a sign further up the highway, but closer to the quarry there isn't, and so there is some noise that is impacting residents there. We were also going to talk to State Growth about, I think, the lowering of the speed limit. Mr. Reeve, I might have to get you to just refresh my memory now because it was a couple of weeks ago. Mr. Reeve could help us. There were some issues.
Through you, Mayor, not so much about lowering the speed limit, but certainly we've had discussions with the Department of State Growth. I believe they actually put another sign in there about asking truck drivers not to use their air brakes in another location. But one of the things we were going to do was have some discussions with the quarry, particularly about area outside their gates, where at the moment their trucks often stop outside there and sort of takes away from the amenity of the nearby residents. So we think there's probably a fairly easy fix to that one, and we're seeing if the quarry's quite amenable to that. So it's, at the moment, it's just about actually trying to fix a time with the quarry, but hopefully that'll happen shortly in the next week or so.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a follow-up question from something that Councillor Fox has just mentioned. Was there any talk at the meeting that you had with the Leslie Vale Community Group as to whether or not they had entered into any discussions with the quarry managers over their concerns and what the response may have been?
My recollection was that they had tried to, but there hadn't been a great deal of response from the quarry. Some other residents that I met with recently said they did secure a meeting, so I think it's been variable.
Mixed.
In terms of the engagement directly by the quarry to local residents. And I think a couple of the residents that were at this last meeting, they live further away. They don't live directly on the road going into the quarry. They live further down, but they're still being impacted by the noise and
right.
And so on. So I think the quarry felt, well, my assumption is they felt less engaged to engage, less inclined to engage with them because they were further away.
Yep.
Yet they still have some concerns, and they certainly have done some noise recording that they're able to provide, and we certainly encourage them to provide it to the EPA so that they can have that as evidence.
And we're getting, as a council, relatively involved because the complaint level is satisfactory enough for us to realise this is an issue. We want to try and mediate something here. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these issues are outside of our control.
Yeah,
they're the domain
correct.
Of the EPA and the and Department of State Growth. But because residents have been coming to us and expressing concern, I've said, well, we'll hear what you say and we'll try and facilitate some of these meetings and where we can make representations to State Growth for changes in that area and hopefully, and I would like, once the dust settles on the election and we have a government installed, is make representations to the government about some of the issues around that intersection in particular, because it is very, very difficult to pull out of there.
Mm.
And it has been highlighted in a previous study as being a concern, that intersection.
Thank you.
Any further questions? No. It was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Street. All those in favour? Against? Carried. Notices of motion on page 123. There were no notices of motion. Confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. I'm looking for a... hang on, I've turned over to the right thing. Sorry, I'm just having a look here. Yeah. Yep. Confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Yeah. I'm reading off here. Is that correct? Oh, hang on. Sorry. Turn on. Sorry. Excuse me.
Yeah,
that's what I just did.
Yep.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, just checking. All good. Okay, so need a mover and a second. We've got a mover and a second. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Thank you very much for your attendance this evening. In accordance with Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recordings Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Open session of Council adjourned at 6:58 p.m. So thank you very much and good evening.